How long, O Lord? Those are the words that begin Psalm 13, but are found in the pages of other psalms as well. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all day? How long, O Lord? They also echo the anguished cries throughout time and space and history. We find these words in the mouths of psalmists as we flip through the pages of the book of Psalms. We see these words popping up again and again. How long, O Lord? We see them in prophets like Isaiah and Habakkuk and Zechariah as they are facing the troubles of their day and they wonder, how long, O Lord? We see it on the lips of apostles like Paul as he wrestles with the ins and outs of ministry and the ins and outs of something that is just weighing him down and beating him up as he asks, how long, O Lord? And we even find them on the mouth of Jesus himself. Now, they may choose different words, but the sentiment is still the same. Words like enough, or I can't take much more, or seriously, where are you? Do you even care? Or simply, why? It's a cry of desperation and an exclamation of despair. It's a question that should be shouted in the midst of chaos. Where are you? Why, O Lord, do you stand so far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? These might be the words on the disciples' lips as they strain against the oars and the storm on the sea. I want us to imagine ourselves in the story that Paul read for us this morning. Put yourself there in the boat. You see, this quiet, moonlit sail has now become a torrential downpour of rain, and you fight against the storm that threatens to capsize your boat. The winds are howling, the waves are crashing, and you are drenched from the salty sea and from the sweat of your efforts just to keep that little boat from going under. You didn't really want to be here. You see, you wanted to be with Jesus. For some reason, he sent you on ahead to the other side of the sea. And that was fine when everything was going well. But where are you now, Jesus? See, the last time this happened to the disciples, because this isn't the only time this has occurred in their lives, but the last time this happened, these storms came up. At least Jesus was asleep in the stern. We knew he was there with us. But now, you're on your own. And just when you need him the most, the Lord seems absent. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever been through a situation like that? I think it's different for each one of us. But there are times that we go through in life where we go through these periods where it's just difficult to trust. Where it's difficult to trust that God is there with you. See if you can find yourself in one of these. Disease, disability, disfigurement, disaster, depression, difficulties, or despair. You're dealing with broken hearts or broken dreams, broken promises, broken relationships. Jobs are lost and friends leave and loved ones fall out of touch or out of love. Parents revert to being like children and children wander away. Or we encounter situations in life that cause our minds to wonder. Or we're plagued with problems in our physical health or in our mental health or our spiritual or emotional well-being. Or we encounter things like abuse, abandonment, anger, anxiety, adultery. Others' addictions threaten all that we hold dear. Or one bad decision destroyed a life. Or we suffer the consequences of other people's bad choices. Do you find yourself in any of that at any point in your story? And you start to wonder, and you cry out in pain, and you pray and maybe plead, and you ask God, how long, O Lord? Why? Why do you stand so far off? Are you even there? Do you even care? Why do you seem so absent when I need you the most? This sermon series that we are in is talking about the idea of trust. Trust. Do you trust God? God? Do you believe that God is trustworthy? And that's something that is often easy for us, and it's very easy for us to think about and to talk about and to believe in when everything is going well, when everything seems perfect. But is it something we just say when life seems easy? Or is it something that we cling to and believe in when life is outrageously difficult? Can you trust God even at moments when it seems like he's absent, when you don't get a response? Today I want to talk to a family in our congregation that knows a little bit about learning to trust God when times are tough. So I'm going to ask the lackeys to come up on stage and join me. I sprung this on them this morning, unwittingly. We had talked about it before, but I think our dates all got crossed. And so I'm going to get y'all stools. Do you want stools? Yeah, so you don't have to stand and feel. That's service right there. Thank you. Where would y'all like to sit? I'm good wherever. Wherever you'd like to sit. Y'all good to share a mic? Should I shift? What's good for sound? Are we good? It's live. Okay. In January of 2013, that was in my first year here. We'd been here about 6 months at that point. Megan and I went to a life group at Carrie and Melinda's house. And after dinner, after a lesson, we were all sitting around having dinner when their son Nathan is refusing to eat. And this is one of my first real memories of this situation. I remember you being scared, Melinda, and worried because his appetite had been diminishing over the course of the past few weeks, and he was complaining more and more about his stomach hurting. And you told us that he was going to go see a doctor later on that week, and that y'all weren't all that worried about it, but you wanted to figure out what was ailing him. And so, January of 2013, talk about how life changed at that moment. What led you to think something was going on, and how did y'all take the news?
This is working. Nathan was 3 and a half at the time, and he had basically been sick since Thanksgiving of the year before. He had been having intermittent fevers, which at the time was really just sort of a pain, because every time he ran a fever, I'd get a call from daycare and I'd have to take him home, and he couldn't go till the next day. And we kept taking him to the doctor, and the doctor couldn't figure out what was wrong, so we just thought it was normal. Normal 3-year-old fevers that, you know, get in the way of trying to work and have a normal life. There were a couple of incidents at Christmas where my dad actually came to visit and hadn't seen him for 6 or 7 weeks and made a comment about how skinny he looked everywhere except his abdomen, which was really large. And I hadn't even noticed that. You know, it's one of those things, you just sort of go colorblind to things like that. And in addition to the fevers, in addition to the appetite, he also was not sleeping. And Nathan was a very good sleeper from the time he was a baby, which is good because we had two at the same time, so it was nice that at least one of them slept pretty well. And then we went on a trip with Carrie's family to Galveston, and he wouldn't go more than, I don't know, maybe 5 feet from me. He was very, very attached, very uncomfortable, you could tell. And then one morning in January, at the very end of January, he came out of his crib, or out of his toddler bed at the time, and walked into the living room and was kicking his leg every time he took a step, just one leg. And I had never seen him do that before. I didn't know what that was about, but I knew deep down inside that today was the day. So I rushed him to the pediatrician. She did, and she just felt his tummy. And granted, you know, we had been to the doctor probably 15 times in the last 6 weeks. She felt his tummy. She said, I need you to take him to the emergency room at Texas Children's right now. And so we took him to the emergency room at Texas Children's. I did. I called Carrie. He was at work. He met us there. They did a sonogram. As soon as they did the sonogram, they sent us to the CT. As soon as we had the CT done, we were standing in the hallway outside radiology and with no idea what was going on. And just a random radiologist walked by and said, you know, who are you? What are you doing here? We said, we don't really know. Our son's in there. Took us into a room and said, you know, there's something wrong. And over the next few days, we were told that he had a stage 4 neuroblastoma that had metastasized from a large grapefruit-sized tumor in his tummy all the way up his chest cavity into his shoulder area. And that changed our life that day.
Talk a little bit about how life changed, if you don't mind. How did life change? And then specifically, how did your faith change over the course of Nathan's diagnosis and treatment?
Well, life changed, as it does with any significant illness, because you're no longer doing the everyday thing. We had to basically split our family in half because Natalie couldn't come to the hospital. Natalie, Nathan's twin sister, you know, we wanted her to be as normal as possible. So one of us stayed with Natalie in the evening at home. One of us stayed with Nathan in the hospital at night. And we took turns. So we decided to make sure that we both got quality time with both of them. And so that's what we did. How our faith changed that day, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it took a pretty deep dive. Probably worst faith day of my life. For those few weeks, that was tough. For about 2 weeks, I guess.
Yeah, like Melinda said, things definitely changed. We try to, what they say is make a new normal. So we did that. We came up with a plan. But for me, I was learning new things every day. Melinda's a scientist, knows about all these things, and I was just like, you're saying words I can't pronounce, I don't know what they mean, and you're going to do things that I've never even heard of. And so, take some faith to know that those folks know what they're doing, and they're doing the right things. So.
In the midst of that, you say faith, you know, it's a struggle. It's taking a beating. You're having to learn to deal with the questions that come up. So what were some of those questions that came up, and how did you wrestle with them? How did you deal with them?
Well, I think the most obvious is it going to survive this? And then with respect to whether or not, and then how important was the answer to that question to my relationship with God in the future? We had had a tragedy in Carrie's family where his 18 or 19-year-old cousin had died in a car accident, probably about, 6 or 7 years before that, something like that. And so our family had been through that, but obviously it wasn't my son, it wasn't my life. It wasn't the child that I had waited for 10 years, struggled through infertility and all those things for. So at the beginning, I felt like it was a little bit of a bait and switch because Nathan and Natalie were such a blessing. Those who were in our life group when we were pregnant with them remember how exciting it was, how challenging it was. But I have two watershed moments that I remember. One was when I went home, the first time I got to go home after Nathan was diagnosed, which was a few days, by myself. Natalie was at school, it was probably about 2:00 in the afternoon. And I went into my room, shut the door, and then I started screaming very loudly and crying. I think I ended up on the floor, for probably about an hour. Very, very angry. Very angry. And the person I was angry at was God. For all the reasons I just described. And if you saw Nathan then, you knew how sick he was. And I hated. And I knew, like Carrie said, I knew what was going to happen. And I knew what we were going to have to do to him. And I wasn't happy about that. So but you know what? I got up and I took a shower. And I got back in my car and I drove back up to the hospital. And, you know, I look back on that and I know to this day that God was there. God was sitting there on the floor with me, just letting me go through what I needed to go through. You know, he wasn't saying, don't cry, don't be angry. It's not okay to be angry. It's not okay. I didn't feel like he was telling me that. I feel like he was telling me it's absolutely okay to be angry. And I'm here for you, whatever you need. And then the second moment for me was whenever I was driving home from a particularly difficult time, and I can't remember what treatment he was doing or whatever, but driving home on 288, I remember it like it happened yesterday. And I just had this feeling that even if Nathan didn't make it through this, I was going to be at church on Sunday morning. And I think I had been asking myself that for months. You know, what would I do if and when that happened? Would I go to church on Sunday? And I didn't really know. And I don't know what happened that moment and why it was I did that or why it was I had that conversation with God in the car driving home that day. I don't know. But that was a watershed moment for me, and I never looked back. Do you have something?
What does it mean to you then that God is trustworthy? So how did your trust in God grow in the midst of this? What kind of questions do you still have? But what does it mean to you that God is trustworthy?
Well, during the whole process, you know, I don't think there was an instance that we didn't feel like he was near us. Constant daily prayers from our friends, our family, complete strangers. You know, that was uplifting. Just knowing that, you know, daily things that happened to improve his situation. Some days things didn't improve, but you knew that if you had patience and you had trust that things were going to get better. Now, why did we think things were going to get better? We don't know. But it's just having, you know, positive attitude. But, you know, you always want to believe things are going to get better. But through this whole process, we met other families that were going through similar situations. Of course, every situation is different, but, you know, seeing some of their faith helped also. But just having trust that something was going to happen, you know, of course, we didn't have any control over it. We knew that we were doing everything we could. So.
The only thing I would add to that is, you know, just me personally, I still have a lot of questions. One of the things, if you've talked to me about this any time, one of the things I really struggle with is why, number one, why Nathan? Number two, why not Nathan? You know, one of the things that we see on the ninth floor at Texas Children's and then through all of our connections now that we have with cancer families is neuroblastoma stage 4 has something like a 30% survival rate in kids. And if you relapse, it's below 10%. So why was it that Nathan, who is sitting here in the green shirt, living a happy, you know, almost 9-year-old life with his friends, why did he survive? And why do we have so many friends whose children did not? And I'm not going to lie and say that hasn't challenged my prayer life, whether or not God answers prayers, how God answers prayers. But I feel like because I really do deep down inside trust him, because we survived that. Even if we had lost Nathan, we still survived it. I think that I trust him at a foundational level. And so all of these questions are okay. And maybe people can learn from the fact that we have questions and we don't have the answers. And that doesn't mean that we don't love God, you know. That doesn't mean that I don't trust him. It just means maybe I don't know how everything is supposed to work. And maybe me, being the person that I am, needed to be taught that lesson. I don't know. It's okay for me to not have all the answers. But we were, you know, it's hard for me to say we were blessed, because I don't like that phrase particularly. We were lucky with respect to Nathan's health. But I know for a fact that we were not lucky with respect to the fact that God was with us through all that. This church was, I don't know what we would have done without the people in this church. But luckily, we don't have to find that out, because you guys were amazing. So I would say where I am right now, I still have questions about stuff. But that's okay. I'm okay with having those questions. I wasn't for a while. I've gone through, you know, it's kind of like the new normal thing is kind of like a grieving process, because you grieve your old life and you go through these stages of acceptance and anger and questioning and all that sort of stuff. I think I'm still sort of in the questioning phase, but I didn't used to be okay with that, but I think I am now. I'm good where I am with respect to the questions that I have.
I'm going to spring one on you I didn't let y'all know about, but if you were talking to somebody that's facing a difficult time right now or an unknown future, what would you want them to say, to hear from you? What would you say to them? It could be about cancer, not about cancer.
Pray constantly.
I think I would say that the outcome is not as important as the process. You can't control what happens at the end. We couldn't control where Nathan's cancer was, how much he had, how he responded to treatment. But we could control who we were. We could control our family. Like Carrie said, we could control our attitude. And we can control how much we're willing to put in God's hands, regardless of what's going to happen at the end. I don't know how, you know, sometimes that's not helpful day to day, but you have to trust. You have to trust the process. That was one of the hardest things, I think, for me, was trusting the doctor that these people are going to be the people who save my kid or don't save my kid. And I see that a lot in people who don't have God in their lives that are going through childhood cancer, that they don't have a trust in the process that I think is so grounding for you. And so I think that's what I would say, is don't lose yourself. Don't lose your relationship with God, your relationship with your friends, because you're so scared of what's going to happen at the end.
Well, thank you guys for sharing a little bit about that time and about faith and trust. And so, we'll let them off the hot seat at the moment. When people ask me, why do terrible things happen? Why does this difficult? I always say the same thing. I don't know. I don't have a clue. I don't know why kids get cancer. Why famines happen, why wars start. I don't have a clue. Like, I have this nice overarching theology that tells me this is what I believe about life and God and faith. And yet, I find sometimes in the midst of it, one-on-one with people hurting, that I believe all that still. But it's woefully unimportant in that hospital room over that cup of coffee. Where is God in all this? I don't know. I don't. I believe he's there. I believe he cares. I believe that God gives hope in the midst of it all. I believe that God restores and gives help in the midst of hurt and makes beauty out of things that are broken. Here's what I love in the midst of this text. This story actually starts with Jesus in the midst of heartbreak. He finds out that his cousin John, who's been in prison for a while, has just been killed because it was convenient. And so Jesus withdraws to the other side of the lake, trying to get away and spend some time alone with his disciples and with God, and the people follow him. And so here's this man who is brokenhearted, but when he sees the crowd, we're told that he had compassion on them. And it's added to it that they were like sheep without a shepherd. And so he begins to, in the midst of his own hurt, he begins to help other people. But Jesus, in the midst of all of this, still has a heavy heart. And so at the end of the day, he sends his disciples on ahead because he feels the need to pray. And maybe he doesn't know the storm's coming, or maybe he does, and he sends them on anyway. And yet what we know is right here in the boat, right? In the midst of chaos, and it seems like the Lord isn't there. But we're actually told in one of the other Gospels that Jesus saw them straining against the oars. And Jesus walks out there. And then there's this one little statement that in the Gospel of Mark is added. But he meant to pass them by. Which seems odd to us, right? He steps out because the storm's raging. They're straining. But he means to pass them by. Jesus walked all the way across the Sea of Galilee just to not stop. It's a little awkward, right? If that was the plan, then why did he walk so close that they could see him? But I think it's meant to remind us that this term to pass by is actually used in the Old Testament to talk about a theophany. A theophany is when God shows up and makes himself known. And so God passed by Moses and rocked his world. He passed by Elijah, and Elijah fell on his face, weeping and worshiping. And God is about to show up in the midst of their storm. He's making himself known as he passes by in the midst of their chaos. When things seem most out of control, he's about to bring his power to bear. Because it's often in the chaos of life that we can see God most clearly. And it's then that we can learn to trust him. But I believe God's always there. I believe he's always at work. I believe he's always watching and listening. But sometimes God doesn't do the things I want him to do. Jesus didn't heal every disease. He didn't calm every storm. He didn't take away every infirmity. He didn't show up at every funeral and raise people back to life. He didn't show up in the midst of his own grief and bring John back from the dead. He didn't restore everybody's sight or open everyone's eyes or force people to respond in faith. He just didn't do it. He didn't heal if he wasn't asked. And he even moved on once or twice when there were still more people hanging around that could have been healed at the moment. And I don't know why. I don't. And that's still true today. Cancer still comes back sometimes. It doesn't respond to treatment for some. Accidents still happen. People still die. People still hurt us. Hurricanes hit. Disasters strike. Famines break out. Diseases still occur. And I don't know why that happens. But I do know two things. First, we learn a lot about ourselves when times are the toughest. In the midst of chaos, we learn where our truth lies and what we trust in. And it's at that moment when we find out if we're going to let God's grace be sufficient for us or not. And the second thing I believe is that beauty still can come from ashes. And God can still do great work when all hope seems lost. And sometimes God heals. And praise God when that happens. But regardless, I believe he's always there. To comfort, to mourn, to love. And we're going to talk next week about how we can recognize the presence of God. So come back and anticipate that conversation. But I believe we can have assurance that God is with us. We're going to sing about that, and then we're going to take communion together. Let's continue our worship as we remind ourselves of the trust that we can have in God this morning.
Be with me.